your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Jen Cruz, your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. I've got Clayton Crawford as my co-host tonight.
Hello,
hi, Clayton.
Everyone.
Are you there?
I'm here. Hello, everyone.
Hey. And we cannot contain our excitement because returning to the show tonight is Andrea Perrin. It was her true story that inspired the movie The Conjuring. But tonight, she's come back to the journey to share with us about UFOs, the galactic family, and ETs. So without any delay, let's bring her on so she can share with us all that she has to share. Hey, Andrea, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for inviting me back. This is my favorite topic. And honestly, your show is one of my very favorite interviews I've ever done, ever.
Yay.
Out of thousands. You know, there's just sometimes you feel that right and proper niche. You know, you're with your people, you're with your tribe. It feels good. It's all warm and fuzzy. You know, it's I have that with you. And And these, you know, crazy guys you hang out with. last time, it was hard for me to contain my laughter because Clayton was kind of spread eagle. It looked like he was laying on a bed or across a desk or, you know, I don't know what configuration or calisthenics he was attempting to perform, apparently forgot that there was a video feed for me so that I could actually watch him being that flexible, which I got to tell you, I totally resent at 59 years old. I'm totally over it. And someday you'll be as stiff as I am. I just want you to know that. Someday it's going to hurt to breathe. Okay, I just want you to know that. I know that seems like a long time in the future for you, but honestly, it's going to be like that. It's going to be like 10 seconds, and you're going to be old too, okay?
Right before you came on, Andrea, I was telling him, okay, because he was laying down again, and I said, you need to sit up.
Like when we did your first show, I was actually at my great aunt's house. I was spending the night with my aunt, and the computer desk just didn't work because it was too low and the chair was too high. So I had to like figure out something. So I had to just set it up on the bed, and it was so hot in that room.
You know, I knew he was going to come up with some lame excuse. I knew he was. A great aunt? Really? Okay. All right. We're going to let it fly. We're going to let it fly, Clayton. But you know what? I can see you. I'm keeping my eye on you. Remain upright for the duration of the broadcast.
Aren't you glad you weren't laying down when she came on, Clayton? Oh, that's funny.
Well, I'm really excited to be here with you tonight because during our last interview, we just touched on this subject, as I recall, in the last like 5 or 10 minutes of the show. I think we talked about my books, we talked about my movie, we talked about In a Flicker, and then we kind of crammed in the only thing that's really important to me. It really is. And I remember saying something that like that to you either during the broadcast or immediately after when you promptly told me I had to stay on Skype so that you could book me for the next show, which was, I was thrilled because, you know, two birds, one stone is great. But I love birds. I would never hurt a bird with a stone, just so that everyone's really clear on that. It's a phrase. Okay. I just felt like we had just kind of scratched the surface about that. And when I tell you that it's the most important thing to me, there's nothing hyperbolic about that. I've known since I was 12 years old that there is something beyond our existence. I don't know still exactly what it is or why it takes the forms that it does, or why it attempts to interact with us the way that it does. But it is. It's not a figment of our imagination. It's not an optical illusion. It is miraculous and wonderful. But I know already, and I've known my whole life virtually, that there is something beyond our death, and that there is some type of afterlife or residual energy, or we go on in some way, shape, or form. So that's all fascinating and interesting, and it's been such a part of my life for so long that it's not like it's old hat, but I prefer to concentrate my research and my efforts in understanding, interacting with, and engaging the living, breathing, sentient, prescient beings that not only circumnavigate this globe in numbers that most human beings could not begin to comprehend, but who also interact with us on planet, who are actually here with us. I never refer to them as aliens because of the negative connotation of that word. I always call them what I perceive them to be, which is the galactic family. They're no more alien to Earth than we are. And in fact, I think they most likely had a hand in our evolutionary development.
Absolutely.
So it only makes sense to me. I mean, with all the research that I've done, I've been a ufologist before ufology was a term, before it was a word, before it was a field of study. When I was a young teenager, I had my first conscious sighting that was so profound that it literally, I think it changed the chemical composition and chemistry of my brain. I literally felt my mind expand as though that was a physical manifestation. It wasn't actually. My brain did not grow in my head, but my mind exploded with new knowledge. Not only the knowledge of what I had seen overhead, which was breathtaking in scope and scale, but likewise, interpreting that experience, finding a way to express that experience. And it happened at the farm, which is why I've said ever since that I think that there is some correlation and some integration between extraterrestrials and spirit. and this is only my own hypothesis. I have no empirical evidence that this is how it is. But according to my own experience, because I was blasted with information in terms of what a lot of physicists, astrophysicists, and quantum mechanic scientists are pursuing, It's dimensional in nature. And so very often now, when people are referencing the existence of ghosts or spirits, they talk about the existence of a fourth dimension, that something beyond our three-dimensional five-sensory realm. And I believe that based on the information that I've intuited, that I've been downloaded with, that I've been messaged with over the years, that there are a multitude of dimensions that exist simultaneously, that we're the infants of the cosmos. I mean, we're like one step away above amoebas in terms of our, and I know there's some people like, oh, that's not true. Well, yes, it is. Okay, really? Yes, it is. I mean, I think that my most famous quotation is also my most profound quotation, and that is that we know nothing compared with what there is to know. I think it's really dangerous for us to assume that we have a grasp of any of this. I think it's highly plausible and quite logical that this is a plane of action. Earth space is a place where we come to learn and grow and experience life in a three-dimensional five-sensory vessel. But that's just a fraction of what life and existence really is. I think that everything is energy. I'm in the same school of thought with Einstein and Tesla in terms of that. Everything is energy. It's not formed. It does not disperse. It transforms. It mutates. It alters itself in transition, which is why I don't think that we really, as human beings, have a full understanding of life and death in the afterlife. But I think before you can really, really experience fifth dimension, which is what the galactic family refers to, fifth dimension, seventh dimension, ninth dimension are the messages that I receive from a multitude of sources, including them directly. We have to understand not only the limitations, the self-imposed limitations of our third dimensional living. We have to be able to start to be to see into the fourth dimension, to start to be able to perceive spirit around us and break down the invisible veil that we actually imposed upon ourselves. Because I don't think that there is a veil. I don't think that there is any kind of line of demarcation between one dimension and the next dimension. If everything exists simultaneously, we put that in place to make us feel safe and contained in our own little box and our own little world. And this is what makes sense. And if I can touch it and smell it and taste it, and then okay, then that's okay. And anything else? No, that's just too weird. But I think that the reason why I have the a connection and attachment that I do with extraterrestrials is because I've already stepped through the fabrication, as it were, of that veil and am perfectly comfortable being totally surrounded by spirit, interacting with spirit, communicating with spirit. And so it seems the next logical step for me to understand that we are entering the age of Aquarius. This is the fifth dimension that we are making a spiritual transcendence into. And they are here in droves. They are here in incomprehensible numbers to make their presence known around this planet, because that alone, just our acknowledging that they are here, is part of what lifts up, resonates with some, and raises the vibration of the planet overall. They're not supposed to intercede or interfere or change anything structurally on our behalf. If they could, they would have already come down and healed the gaping wound that is right. Fukushima Daiichi in Japan, with 3 of 4 nuclear reactors in complete total meltdown. Perhaps if they were asked by enough of us and acknowledged by enough of us, they would. I would deeply appreciate it, considering it's poisoning all of our oceans. You know, we're really, in many ways, we're already past the point of no return in terms of the damage we've done to this planet. Thankfully, she is a miraculous self-healing machine. But the way that she will self-heal the more damage that we do is by simply wiping the pestilence off the planet, and we are the pestilence. We're the only creature on this planet that fouls its own nest. That in mind, there is an equally prescient correlation between extraterrestrials and what we are doing to this, to our own planet, and how we are rising. I mean, this is a point where we're either going to self-destruct as a race, or we are going to evolve rapidly. All indication is that we will evolve rapidly, because that's what I see ongoing as I look, you know, over the grand scheme of things. And even though it seems like we're in utter chaos, complete turmoil, political unrest, geopolitical madness all over the planet, not just in our own country, it is the order that comes from chaos. This is all part of the paradigm shift. All of this has to happen so that everything that is ugly and toxic and painful and hateful rises to the surface, where that energy can be cleared so that we can evolve.
Spirit. It's a purge, a major purge.
It is. It's a major purge. It's like the ultimate vomitus that this planet could spew, honestly. Yeah. And we're all living through it. And we're all here for a reason. We're all part of this process. Either we're part of the problem or we're part of the solution.
Absolutely.
But we play a distinct part in it. And there are many who believe that we soul contracted to come here at this time to help in the process.
I will not discount that.
I think that's entirely viable.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Okay, I've just talked for 18 minutes straight.
Good job. I wasn't going to interrupt you.
I am one of the ones that believes that my soul, I signed a contract to come here to save this planet. Is this planet my home world? No. But I do think that it needs saving, that and the planet and the human race.
Yes.
And all, because the human race has the power to affect every other thing living on the planet.
Yes. Or destroy it. Absolutely. Yes. We're a living, breathing testament to that. I cannot think of anything that is more important than knowing that we're not alone in the universe. And I think that it's incredibly arrogant of people to who assume that we are the only life form in this universe. It's beyond arrogant. It's just ridiculous.
It makes no sense.
It's arrogant, ignorant, egotistical. I mean, the list could go on because because if we're here, then of course there's other life out there.
Well, the vast majority of the races that are documented having visited planet Earth, and there's 57 documented races that we know of that have been to the planet, are the vast majority are humanoid. I think that's amazing. I mean, I think that is... there are a number of races that have very similar belief systems to our own and refer to what we call God as source, prime creator. These are phrases that are being channeled through certain people.
Use source.
Yep, I use source too. divine mind. I use that as well. Divine intelligence, infinite intelligence.
Collective consciousness.
Collective consciousness, cosmic consciousness, yes. And it doesn't really matter what we label it, because we really don't know what it is. But I do think that we're each a living, breathing embodiment of it, of that consciousness in some way, shape, or form. I'm a deeply faithful, deeply spiritual person, but the only time you'll ever see me in a church is if it's a wedding or a funeral.
Same.
That's Same. It. That's
and even it. Then, I don't want to go.
Because I feel that, and you know, I have nothing against many, many people, countless millions of people get their solace and their comfort from being a part of an organized religion, a group of people who are like-minded. I have that same thing. You know, I even had a friend of mine who's an atheist once say to me, you're devotional to your cause. You know, you treat it like it's a religion. You know, talking about my engagement, extraterrestrial engagement. And, you know, and I turned on her and I said, it's the antithesis of a religion. It's, you know, the whole concept of organized religion is some, in general, is some greater, more powerful being out there. And then little old us trying to meet those standards and live up to, you know, what has supposedly come down is the law, the rules of the road. I said, I adhere to only one rule, and it exists in all the major religious texts on the planet. And it's in one way, shape, or form or another, a version of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you, period. Be kind. Be loving, be sweet, be gentle, be good.
Forgiving.
It's really that easy. Just be good. Do something every day that will make someone else's life a little easier. Smile when you don't have to. You know, just pick a flower and hand it to a stranger and watch the expression on their face. That's raising the vibration of this planet. Each and every one of us that contributes to the greater good, to the cause of wholeness and healing, we're making a difference. Just by existing, we make a difference Yes. one way or the other every day. So if we choose to live in the light, if we choose to be the beacon, if we choose deliberately to live in a way that benefits others, that touches the lives of others. If we can accomplish that, then I consider that each one of us that lives that way is living as successfully as humanly possible, regardless of the bottom line in our bank account, which is irrelevant to whether or not we're a successful human being.
Right.
Because love is the answer to every single question.
Yes. Yeah, Amen. Absolutely. Wow.
I love that.
Yeah. Wow. That was really amazing.
Audrey has asked it twice in the chat room. Of course, Audrey's in the chat room. and she says, Jen, ask her about singing for their appearance.
I do that. And I'm not going to sing on your air tonight. And the reason that I'm not. And this is true, and this really happened, and I have witnesses. But I had to get a new phone a couple of weeks ago because I was photographing them, and somehow they fried the motherboard in my phone that I had just finished paying off. It was a really, really expensive, nice phone, and all of a sudden I looked down on it, and what I was photographing seemed like it was caught inside the screen. And it was a ball of purple light, every shade of purple to lavender and in between that you can imagine. And it was moving all over inside my phone. And I said, you have to leave now. And it did. But then my phone died. And, you know, my immediate response to them was, look, okay, you break it, you buy it. if you can't buy it, fix it. You know, because like I just finished paying this sucker off. And not only were there no pennies from heaven to help with the purchase of my incredibly expensive new phone, but now I'm afraid to sing into my computer. No, I am, because I really am. It doesn't make me nuts. I'm just right. Cheap. I've got Scottish blood in me. I am not spending another dime on something I don't have to.
Oh, that's so funny. You know? Don't fry the equipment.
They have their favorite songs. They have their absolute favorite songs. I discovered it quite by accident. I was in the theater for many, many years, decades that I spent in musical theater. And I did a lot of straight plays too, but I prefer musicals. And believe it or not, with this deep, husky voice I have now, I used to be first chair, first soprano, like, you know, forever ago. I had a 3.5-octave range. I was up somewhere in the stratosphere. I would have to retrain my voice to do that now. But they like where it resonates now. And I sing different songs to them. And it's not that they come when called. When I sing, they're already here. It seems to give them permission to make their presence known. And when I do these big events around the country, I take anywhere from 50 to 250 people outside and formally introduce them to the Galactic family, with the understanding that if they have any fear about it, that it would be best for them to go off and have a coffee or something at that time, so that the family is very conscientious. They will not impose themselves on someone who's not ready. So I kind of prep everybody, teach them how to look at the sky, with new eyes, with not the eyes they were born with, but to look at it interdimensionally, extra-dimensionally. Honest to God, it takes all of 5 minutes to teach them how to do that. And then I sing, and the sky fills up with extraordinary light anomalies that could be nothing other than them. I have to admit, I quite enjoy blowing people's minds wide open.
It is a beautiful experience. It truly is.
I love it.
I do too.
I lost Jen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted. I said, I just can't wait to meet you in person. It's going to be so awesome.
I know.
Oh, I'm just saying it, girl. You're preaching my truth all over the place tonight.
I was just telling them in chat that I've connected with you very hardcore twice on a very emotional level tonight. And it was truly beautiful.
It is. It truly is beautiful. Yeah. Well, I feel that we're here to work together. We're here not only to know each other and to be friends and care about each other, but you're providing me with an incredibly valuable platform to share my message of love and peace and hope. And that's really all it boils down to. I mean, it's really no different than what any of the great prophets have ever imparted, especially Jesus. I'm also a firm believer that, in Jesus Christ, but I think that it's highly likely that he came from an extraterrestrial.
He was not human.
That the light in the sky was actually a ship that was showing the wise men how to get to the baby. You know, I really, the astronomers have already proved, based on the time that Jesus Christ was supposed to have been born, that there was nothing in the sky that could have shed that kind of light. The only way that the whole implantation, immaculate conception thing makes any sense to me at all was that he was a gift from them to us to teach us how to live in peace and we just promptly killed him because he was just way too peaceful and loving. You know, it's in a lot of ways, humanity has not evolved nearly as rapidly as we should have. We've evolved technologically. We've evolved militaristically. We've evolved architecturally. We've evolved in a lot of ways, but not what counts.
Right. And with that, we're going to have to go to our break. We're halfway through the show. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Andrea Perrin.
Moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the producer and host of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. I am a published author, academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast who holds 4 advanced degrees with an interest in parapsychology and life after death issues. I have written about and encountered nearly 100 situations involving the paranormal, with my most frightening experience being a floor-length mirror cycling around in front of me in a haunted room I had stayed in. I invite you to tune in Thursday evenings at 11 o'clock p.m. to 12 midnight Eastern Standard Time right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. When we are not live on the air like we are right now, you can find us at thejourneyradioshow.com. And hey, please do check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thejourneyonradio. And we're back with Andrea Perrin. We love her. She's talking to us about ETs, the galactic family, and UFOs. So without any further ado, Clayton and I are welcoming back from the break, Andrea Perrin. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. You know, I was thinking about where we ended and what you asked me during the break about abductions. That is another word that I shy away from, again, because of the incredibly negative connotation and so much fear-based conditioning around it. I don't know if anyone is ever taken against their will or not. I think that that's probable that some have been. I don't think that every race that visits this planet is entirely benevolent. I think there are some, including the Greys, that are partially artificial intelligence, AI, they're the scientists of the cosmos, and they have a tendency to study us in the same way that we would study an ant bed, that they kind of give us the same regard. The beings that I interact with are the higher beings. They're what are referred to often as the light beings. One of my strangest experiences ever was I was with a couple. I had just done an event with them. It was their event, and they were kind enough to ask me to stay with them at their home. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we were all exhausted. And the husband starts asking me about ETs, and I suddenly got all very awake and animated again. And I said, Oh, there's just, I love them. I love them so much. I love them. And he said to me, when did you have your first experience? And I told him about the flotilla of ships that I had seen. But I also told him that one of the most profound experiences that I ever had came from a film, which was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which I saw in the theater when it was released in, I think, 78 or 79. And as I'm standing in their kitchen, all the lights are on, and they have like 24 lights in their kitchen that are all recessed, that are inset into the ceiling. And all the lights were on, and I stood up and I said, at the very end of the movie, when the tall white being came out of the ship to greet them, and she extended her arms, and I did the same thing as I'm describing it to Joe and Diana, and I extended my arms and I opened them up and I said, I tell you, I had a come to mama moment. And all of a sudden, all the lights in the house started browning out and making sizzling noises, and I shorted out their entire house. It was, Joe swore he saw sparks come off my fingertips when I said
that. Wow.
And that I literally shorted out the whole house. And we're standing there at 2 o'clock in the morning in their kitchen with nothing but moonlight pouring in the window. And Joe turns to Diana and says, honey, we're going to be talking about this for the rest of our lives. And he's like, I'll go downstairs and fix the breaker box. You know, I had to start fishing around for a flashlight. You know, and my immediate reaction was, oh, my God, I am so sorry I did that. I knew I did it. I mean, I knew that I did it. It was obvious that I did it. But I didn't know why or how. But I felt like in that moment it was confirmation from them that I am connected. And very interestingly, and I haven't shared this with anybody yet, I have, my family breeds like rabbits. I mean, I'm not even kidding you. And my mother and father have 13 great-grandchildren.
Oh, wow.
And the eldest of them came up to me at our Easter family celebration. And he's a very reserved, very quiet young man. He's only 10 years old. And he came up to me and kind of sidled up beside me at Easter, right after Easter dinner. And he said, can I talk to you? I said, sure, honey. You know, of course. And he said, I need to tell you about something that I saw in my room. And he proceeds to tell me about a being that seemed to come up through his floor that was very tall and very white. And he described exactly the being that you see at the end of Close Encounters. Well, he's never seen that movie. He doesn't know what that is. And he described this being with huge olive slanted eyes, and that had the softest white skin, and was so beautiful, and told him that it loved me and that it would be okay to talk to me about that visit. And he said to me, Auntie Annie, was that a ghost? And you can imagine, you know, I mean, I had to talk to my niece and my nephew and make sure it was okay that, you know, I started getting into this. And they're both like, oh, my God, of course, you know, please, he needs to know. Let him know. They're here. Let him know. I mean, they were totally cool about it. But
that's awesome.
You know, I mean, I have things like that happen to me, and they not only validate my experiences, but I'm starting to believe that this is all in the family, that everybody in my family has somehow been touched by this. And for that, I'm grateful, because I know that everyone in my immediate family has had experiences with the Galactic family that are very real, very true, and very profound. And I'm often questioned about, you know, why I can speak with it, speak about it so nonchalantly. And the only answer to that is it's perfectly normal. It's perfectly natural. There's nothing super or para about it for me. This is my life. And my connection with them is significant and profound and beautiful. And I could literally talk to you for the next 12 hours without a break and scratch the surface alone of the experiences that I've had over the course of my life. Things that are quite literally unbelievable. Things that would require a suspension of disbelief. And yet it's perfectly natural and perfectly normal to me. And there's absolutely no fear involved. You know, last December 16th, the headline on the New York Times, December 16th, 2017, was official disclosure from the federal government in a story printed in the New York Times. That information was released to the Times, and it was released into the paranormal community. I don't for a moment believe that someone walked into the Pentagon that morning and said, okay, let's tell them the truth today. Let today be the day.
No.
There's a lot more going on. That was a deflection technique. The pressure got to the point where they finally just had to say, yeah, we know. You know, but they know far more than we do. And a few days later, I decided it was time to address disclosure that I had been screaming for and yelling about and, you know, just demanding for decades, because our government and the governments around the world that are aware of this phenomenon have been lying to the citizenry for longer than I've been alive. And withholding information and militarizing everything and keeping it quite to themselves and only allowing tidbits out. And so I made a video and I basically accused them of doing the same thing. I was like, well, you know, isn't that all completely underwhelming? You know, right. That this has, you know, been splashed across the front page of the New York Times. And oh, wow, look, nobody had a reaction to it. If they did have a reaction to it, it was either that they didn't believe it or they already knew it or it was fake news. You know, at this point, you know, I really thought that there would be some kind of shift that took place around this information coming out. And instead, it was completely, entirely underwhelming. Many people didn't even know about it or pay any attention to it. All the major news networks picked up on it. They all ran pieces about it. They all showed the film footage that was supposedly in question about a number of vessels that they had picked up on radar in military planes that they could not identify that were moving, you know, practically at the speed of sound. And then they said, but we've closed down that investigation. We spent X amount of dollars and we closed that down. We're not stupid. We're not stupid. Don't treat us like we're stupid. We know what's going on. There are many people that I work with in this field that have more degrees than Carter's got liver pills. I mean, I feel like the stupid one in the room, okay, when I'm doing one of these conferences and there's, you know, more degrees around me than a thermometer. It's just, these people are amazing. And most of them have just abandoned their careers because they had something happen to them that was so compelling that, you know, for instance, Dr. Stephen Greer, you know, a prominent physician that literally left his life's work to pursue the study of this and to bring this information to the forefront. I would encourage anybody listening to watch the on Netflix, the most amazing documentary called Unacknowledged. And so basically what I did during my interview, during my video that I made, was I accused the government of kind of pitching a snowflake at us that's on the top of an iceberg that's as big as Antarctica, because that's what's being withheld from us. And I only know a fraction of it, but I do know two people who are in the upper echelon of government that are in the top 35, the 35 levels of top secret security clearance above the presidency. And I'm heartened that things are changing rapidly and quickly. A lot of the abduction stories that people have heard, some of them are real. Some things have happened. I know Travis Walton personally. There's no question in my mind that he was taken, but the way that it was depicted in the film bears no actual resemblance to what happened to him, in the same way that The Conjuring bears no actual resemblance to what happened to our family. But I think that predominantly that activity is used as a scare tactic to quell the masses and to keep us fearful. And what I'm trying to tell people is that there is nothing to fear. I only associate with light beings. If you're with me and you're having an experience, you're completely, utterly, totally protected and safe. Nothing's going to happen except that your mind will be expanded and you will understand once and for all that you are not alone in the universe. To me, that's the most important thing for each and every one of us to understand. I don't think that I've ever been quote unquote abducted, but I know I've been off planet. I know I went willingly. And I know the only time that I ever had a very strange experience was actually right here in this house. I got up very early one morning. It was freezing cold. It was November. And I threw on my big, really blue robe that's hard to even look at. It's so blue. And offered to take my sister's dog outside for her. And when I didn't come back in the house after about 15 or 20 minutes, Christine got very concerned. Meanwhile, I'm outside on the back deck and had just lit a cigarette. And the next thing I know, I'm standing there and I can't find the cigarette anywhere. It's gone. It's just completely gone. And I'm calling Libby to come back in the house because it's freezing. And I don't hear her, you know, scooching around in the dried up leaves or anything. And I'm, you know, concerned. I peered over the deck. I looked all around the backyard. No sign of Libby. No sign of my cigarette. I walked back in the house and made a beeline for Christine's bedroom through her bathroom to let her know that she needed to go call Libby to bring her in the house because she wouldn't come for me. And Christine asked me what I was talking about and stepped aside, and there was her dog sitting right beside her. And she said, "You let Libby back in the house a good 20 minutes ago. I was just about to come get you. It's too cold for you to be outside." And then she looked at me and she said, "What happened to your hair?" And I leaned over into her mirror, and my hair had gone from kind of a more pepper than salt, salt and pepper, but more pepper than salt. In the space of 20 Earth minutes, my hair had gone almost completely gray. So wow. I had no idea how long I was gone or where I went, but I changed in that amount of time. I physically changed.
That's extraordinary.
I've not heard of that happening before. It freaked Chris out. She didn't even want to talk about it. She just backed away from me. You know, it startled her. It really startled her.
Yeah.
And I think they kept the cigarette so they'd have my DNA. I don't know what other reason. I don't know where it went. It was lit. It was, you know, I don't know where it went. It was gone.
Wow. I'm blown away by that story. That's amazing.
Honey, I believe me. That's just one that happened to pop into my head. I could literally talk to you for hours and countless hours about the incredibly beautiful, moving, spiritual, connected, cosmic kisses of embraces that I've had from the galactic family over the course of my life. My life has been saved 3 times from unseen forces. I do not know who interceded on my behalf, but whoever it was certainly powerful enough to do so. I have one message and one message only for humanity. And knowing as I do that I'm on this earth, but I am not of this earth. And my message is just love each other powerfully. No matter what, love each other powerfully. It is the only way, it's the antidote to all of this vitriol and hatred, all the ugliness and the dark forces that work on this planet right now. We can literally heal this planet by loving it and loving each other well. Because thoughts are things.
Preach it, honey. Preach it.
Thoughts out into the universe, we are literally changing the configuration of consciousness.
If the human race as a whole could understand the true power of thought, the true power of the mind, when in one second, that conscious thought, all of them could change the entire world.
Yes, literally that quickly, literally instantaneously heal the world and everything in it.
Right.
Yes. But we are slow learners, as I mentioned in our first segment. You know, it, in spite of the advances that we've made in so many areas, what's most important in terms of our own spiritual development and understanding that everything is one thing, and the revelation being that we are one race and one family, and that we are part of the galactic family as much as they are a part of us. Just that realization of oneness is enough to begin a healing process that's so rapid that it's moving across the planet like a tidal wave. There are countless millions of people on planet right now who have had experiences similar or identical to my own. I'm just lucky that I've had experiences that I've been able to write about and share to such an extent that I now have a following and a fan base, and millions of people around the planet know who I am now. And will, you know, tune in and turn on and pay attention and listen to the messages that I impart. So in that respect, I'm very humble and I'm very grateful. And yes, I do talk about it as though it's a matter of fact, because guess what? It's a matter of fact. We are not alone in this universe. We never have been. We are loved. We are being watched over. And they're rooting for us in a big way. But they can't save us. They can't. We have to, you know, one of the stories that I tell, and this is, I think, one of the most important stories that I tell, is when I was a little child. We had just moved to the farm, and my mom and dad took us over to a chicken farm that was close by in Connecticut. And Mom took us into the section where they were allowing the babies to be born. So I saw one of the eggs moving, just like, you know, I could tell the chick was trying to peck its way out of its egg. And I went over and I reached out and I almost laid my hands on it. And my mom took my hand and retracted it and said, "No, honey, you can't help the baby be born or it will die." Well, I was mortified. I was absolutely mortified that I came within a hair's breadth of killing an innocent baby chick, because I did not know what I was doing, and right. I did not know what my impact would be on that creature. And that vision came to me about a year ago in the middle of the night when I was shaken awake in my own bed and grabbed my cigarettes and went outside and looked up into the sky and said, "What? What is it? You know, what?" And flash, there it was. I was 45 years in the past in a split second, having that vision of Mom pulling my hand away from the chicken and the egg.
Wow.
And I realized that what they were trying to tell me is that they can't help us be born. We have to peck our way out of our own egg, because the strength that it requires to free ourselves from the enclosure is equivalent to the amount of energy it will take to sustain us on the outside of the egg.
Yes. You know, I just have to tell you that I'm part Native American, Andrea, and it is, I've heard it said time and time again from Native elders that it is believed that the earth is the womb of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen our father yet because we haven't been born yet, but we have our mother earth here right with us.
Yeah.
And that is so beautiful. It just resonated with me what you just said with that thought. And I thought, oh, I need to tell you that. I need to tell you that. I'm
part Cherokee on my mom's side.
I
have deeply ingrained love of planet Gaia, Mother Gaia. I have, through my own mother, a worship of nature. And so I totally get where you're coming from. It means everything to me. And when I need to be grounded, I go barefoot and put my feet on the ground and dig my fingers into the earth and plant something and nurture it and love it and watch it grow. Because in so planting my garden, I grow my soul.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Oh, that's so beautiful. That is so beautiful. And the earth has so many healing energies for us too, that the best thing we can do is skin to ground in a good place. And I was taught that when you're feeling helpless and hopeless, put your umbilicus to the ground if you can, in a very good place, and you will feel better.
To do it deliberately sometimes, because honest to God, if I'm outside, I'm looking up. If I'm out, I have a permanent crick in my neck. I'm telling you, I do, because I'm always looking up into the stars. I'm always looking, you know, home. I know where my home is. I know what my planet looks like.
Right.
It's not here. I spent most of my early decades of life going, why am I here? Why am I here?
Me too.
What is this? And now I understand why I'm here. And I accept that I'm here, and I try to enjoy every moment of my earthly experience while I'm here, and I never want to come back.
Me either.
And if it was a soul contract, what the hell was I thinking?
I've asked myself that many times, actually.
Yeah.
I really have. What was I thinking?
Thank you, Clayton. We are coming to the end of the show, and I just want to thank Andrea Perrin for joining us, and I really, really hope that she'll stay on the line and schedule again to come on back with us again, because she has so much more to share. And I've shared her website in the chat room for those who are looking for it. I'll share it again, and I'll also share it on this post when it gets uploaded to the website at thejourneyradioshow.com. Stay tuned for next week. Come back to hear Audrey. She's in the chat room. Everybody knows her. She's going to be the guest on our show. She's going to be talking about psychic reading, mediumship, and being intuitive. And she's going to do some readings on the air. So come back and check with us. And Audrey did say she wants you to talk about fairies, but it's the end of the show, so you have to come back.
I will next time.
Thank you so much, Andrea. And thank you, Clayton, for being my co-host. Thank you, Sarge, for being an awesome producer. And thank you to Bear X. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
We'll be right back.